fighting for chairs. So, you know, thank you, everybody. You know, between, I think, about 5 Lyft and Uber cancellations this morning, you know, we were trying to see if we'll kind of make it here, but I got, you know, as Guy said, this location being the intersection of 405, 101, it was quite a task this morning. But anyways, you know, good morning, everybody. This is Maninder Singh. I manage the media entertainment practice for Genpact, and very happy to be here to talk about a topic, you know, which is, you know, which is very pressing, you know, especially in the media industry, around content protection and content moderation. You know, in a world that we live today, which is very hyper-connected, you know, where, you know, pretty much sharing is a second nature, you know, media companies are looking to protect, you know, their content against piracies and, you know, and various violations. While, you know, while we have some guidelines from CDSA, you know, in terms of what steps organizations need to take to protect the content at the various life cycle of the supply chain. But I think from our experience, what we've seen is, I think companies where the struggle is how they are set up internally, how they manage the internal frameworks, because this is an area that spans across various divisions in an organization, and how companies are set up internally to kind of manage this process end to end. Meanwhile, as we all know, that the content is no longer distributed just in a linear fashion, right? We've got OTT video where more and more users are engaging real time, you know, with the content, and, you know, thereby, and that content remains, you know, there on the platforms forever. So that's where we move from the realm of content security protection onto content moderation, right? We all won't be surprised, you know, with some numbers that we have, right? About close to 500 hours of video that is uploaded on YouTube every minute, 65,000 pictures uploaded on Instagram, and about 3.3 million posts on Facebook. So you know, we've seen customers increasingly thinking about how to moderate this content that gets published. So on that note, you know, it's my pleasure to introduce two of our panelists today. So we've got Pradeep, who leads the trust and safety service practice for Genpact. Pradeep, trust and safety, very interesting. Would you want to elaborate a little on what this practice does?
Thanks, Maninder. Hello, everyone. Trust and safety obviously is something that's has terminology gaining a lot of attention in the last maybe 12 to 24 months. For us at Genpact, trust and safety means working with our clients and helping them in terms of brand trust, in terms of delivering on the brand trust that is promised to users. User safety and security across a wide spectrum of things. It involves technology companies and what they are obligated to do to have a safe community, media companies and their obligations to creators on what they need to do to protect content, so on and so forth. So today at Genpact we have several thousand people who support content in 30 languages, spanning the entire life cycle of content creation, content curation, content sort of protection, and enforcement. So I look forward to talking to all of you and hopefully sharing our best practices. Thank you.
Pradeep, thank you. On left of Pradeep is Mike, who leads our digital practice at Genpact and all around intelligent automation. So Mike, you want to spend a very quick minute on what that means?
I'll illustrate this as follows. Hi, folks. There's a shepherd minding his flock in a field, minding his own business. He sees a dust bowl from a cloud getting bigger and closer and closer. And as it stops, a Porsche Cayenne emerges out of the cloud. The guy comes out, really sharp suit, and goes up to the shepherd and says, "Hey, I can tell you how many sheep you've got. Can I have one of them?" Shepherd goes, "Okay." Guy goes to the back of the car, opens up the tailgate, satellite dish comes through the roof, and starts scanning the sky, and he goes, and a lot of clicking and whirring, and says, "You've got 687. He says, "That's fantastic. You're okay, help yourself." As the guy's helping himself, the shepherd says to the guy, "If I can tell you what you do for a living, can I have it back again?" He says, "Yeah, sure, why not?" Pretty cocky young guy. He said, "You're an IT consultant, aren't you?" He said, "How did you know?" He said, "You came here uninvited, you used a whole bunch of technology to tell me something I already knew, and that's my dog in the back of your car." That is often the perception of IT consulting. Now, Genpact isn't like that. We frequently get invited, and you'll hope that you'll invite us again as well to this, to come speak to you afterwards. Yes, we use a bunch of technology, but we use it appropriately, and because the technology is not the thing, it's about the end solution, it's the end result, that's the thing. So can you flip on to this next picture? This is something that amused me. I dug up a while ago. It's a picture of 1975. They're talking about the machine with brains, that how automation would improve our lives, that the way that we can actually go home at the end of the day with our collar still freshly, our shirts still freshly pressed, no grind marks in the collar, we'd have much more leisure time. Of course, the reality of it is, you don't need one machine with brains, you need lots of machines with brains. They're going to be interconnected to each other, and you've got a lot more tasks, and a lot more juggling and balancing going on. Downstairs, they were talking about APIs. The question was, what is it, and where do we find such an elusive little creature under a rock somewhere, right? And so the machine, brains, multiple tasks, and they still got to apply human decisions to these things. So we're going to start, as we go through the Q&A, we're going to start talking about how we can apply some of these digital technologies, how we can apply workflow and robotic automation and AI and machine learning to solve some of the common problems we find around media control and managing the media stream.
Excellent. Thank you very much. So, doing a double click on our topic today. So, gentlemen, what do you see as some of the overarching trends, around content protection, moderation, impacting the media industry today?
Yeah, I think I'll sort of start off with how we see this. And we see this really in maybe four quadrants. First off, it's really content that has a lot of protection. It's more in the publisher space, digital content, where there is piracy, has been piracy for a long time, and techniques that need to be sort of deployed to protect. Second is really creative content, and how companies that have creative content with social media need to look at enforcing their copyrights in various ways where people can share. Once the content is online, it's virtual, everybody owns the content. Third is really a little bit of pilgrimage, and with a lot of new applications that are coming up, some of you have heard TikTok, some of you have probably used it. How does companies work with these apps and technologies that really make it easy for users to take the data? And I think lastly, really mixed media content, and how AI is obviously used on the other side of it, right? So with the technology of deepfake and the technology of how easy it is to take original content and repurpose it, how does that really impact creators, right? So that's really the different parts in which how we see it. And obviously, the trends in which this has developed over the years have also changed a lot, right? I think first of all, in terms of medium, and I think I heard somebody talk about how it was tape drives and CDs, and it was really physical media. It's very easy to track the content. Now it's all virtual, nobody sees it, it's all in the cloud, it's all over the world. How does one really protect and manage content in that sort of environment? Second is social media. And we heard somebody make a remark about how it's really a double-edged sword, where it's good for, at times, a viral reaction to be created for content, right? It's good for marketing purposes. But at the same time, it also makes it very easy for users to share what's original content, and before you know, a lot of people get access to it. And third really is the fact that in most organizations, the ownership for this is not very well established. There are multiple parties who are involved in this, starting from lawyers and legal who want to assert the rights, to technology groups who have obviously great technology, from watermarking to encryption, to maybe marketing who have a hand in what goes on in social media. So really, for us, if you look at it, the convergence of all of this creates an opportunity for somebody to look at the whole process in really like a life cycle framework, to say, hey, can there be a solution that manages it despite really the changes that are happening in the industry today with social media? Is there an opportunity for somebody to connect all these groups at these enterprises and provide solution? So that's really one of the big trends. And we see with proliferation of a lot of these social media tools and technologies, this becoming a bigger problem, and the need for companies to think about how to address this holistically. So Mike, if you want to add from a technology perspective.
But people start thinking about digitization. They tend to think that going on a digitization looks like this. In fact, it looks like this. Right, that's the reality of deploying digitization within your organization.
many organisations out there, they're very good at doing the detection, they're very good at doing the through watermarking and fingerprinting technologies. And however, when that has happened, when that has occurred, there needs to be a whole bunch of processes that go on. Effectively, cases need to be created and managed throughout their entire life cycle, whatever that outcome is going to be. So the ability to raise a case and then manage it and track it throughout, do analytics of that case, how long did it take, what was the outcome, and also even doing some root cause analysis for the thing that triggered that case in the first place. How are cases created? Well, it could be something as simple, I use the word simple in inverted commas, it could be something as simple as having an integration, this nebulous thing called an API, where the process gets triggered by an event. It could be a system event, something's been detected, that's been the trigger, that'll create a case, and then start to kick that off. It might be something done by a human event, somebody physically decides to start a particular process, and that follows through as well. And along the way, of course, there are many things that need to happen from the start of the case to its ending. However, today, what we find, what I'm finding in the industry, is people have got parts. I'm going to try to put breaks in here. People have got parts of the process. They don't join up very well. They either don't join up very well because there's handoffs between different departments and different teams, or they don't hand off very well because there's gaps between the different technology silos they have. There was some conversation downstairs yesterday. There was a conversation this morning from the keynote speakers about having these silos and how they are broken and fragmented systems. And many organizations have got IT systems that are 10, 15, 20 years old, and they can't get them to play very nicely together. And this is where digitization can really make a difference. We're talking about creating the abilities for handshaking between these different systems, overlaying that with complete process control and visibility, so you've actually got some measure of the cases which you're managing. These are trends which we're seeing, not just in this industry, but across all industries, whether it's banking, whether it's insurance, they all have very similar challenges.
Absolutely, and JITPAC has been fortunate to see both sides of the coin, right? So we worked, with the publisher side, right, in looking into how these processes happen from the point of detection to takedown, and then onto, the social media side, where the takedown, where the takedown notice actually goes, and how we've kind of stitched those two together by having an efficient workflow system. So having talked about the trends, gentlemen, media industry itself, it's a bunch of micro industry verticals. You've got social media, you've got the music, you've got the publishers, the studios. So are there any specific nuances that all of these three face in this broad bucket of content moderation and protection?
Yeah, so I think I'll maybe give a couple of real life examples without naming companies, but I'm sure I can connect the dots. So one of our large engagements is the company that helps people create communities, do user generated content, and so on and so forth. A large part of what these companies are sensitive about is the relation they have with advertisers. Obviously, that's really the source of living. And one of the things that advertisers are clear about is where their ads play against maybe a video, a feed, so on and so forth. And really, do their ads come in the middle of a content that's objectionable, maybe for the nature of content, or maybe for other reasons, it was illegally sourced, so on and so forth. So we see a big challenge in even enforcing simple rules because of the different components of this whole process. For instance, the policy for what needs to be enforced is written by lawyers. And I have lawyers in the family, with all the love I have for them, the language is not maybe easy to understand for a common person. Then you have technology teams who create solutions, maybe driven based on AI, maybe driven based on image and video recognition. And they have a level of accuracy that only meets maybe 60-70%, depending on what's the type of media. And then you have a whole bunch of human beings who have to keep track of what's viral, what's trending, what's being retweeted by all the famous personalities that are out there, and take action. So in the course of enforcing the policy through all of this, the actual outcome misses the goal in most respects. So while the expectation for quality is 99%, when it really gets down to it, it's very difficult to do it. And imagine this on a global scale, on 30 different languages. So that's something that we see a lot in terms of the scale of the platforms, specifically for social media and really platforms that drive community. The scale of the platform and the process making it difficult to enforce even simple things. I'll take another example, which is of an entertainment company. And obviously there's a lot of original content, and there is a great deal of interest to drive user engagement with original content, which is, hey, put the content out there, let's see what the user comments, let's see how many people like it, let's see what the rating is, right? So just like how people have started really being sensitive to Amazon ratings, there's a lot of sensitivity to ratings on the content. And obviously, sometimes the original content has personalities, heroes, heroines that people are passionate about. So even beyond commercial drivers, there are drivers to rate, there are drivers to drive a certain kind of feedback. If there is a bunch of comments from one geography, there's a little bit of hate speech there, there seems to be a bit of bullying for a different user. How do these platforms manage? And really, if you think of it, that's not their core capability. They're fantastic in creating content, they're fantastic in bringing that to the market, but managing the dynamics is something that remains really an open area. And quite honestly, it's also not an industry that has a lot of years of experience. It's an industry that is learning, that's really evolved over the last 2 years. Maybe a couple of examples along these lines, and this really manifests in every other sort of micro vertical. And Mike, if you want to add
I'm going to talk a little bit about creating the processes and procedures you need to follow, and also then running and managing them. So creating, many organizations have been doing things a certain way for a very long time. A lot of the information is in people's heads. It's often paper-based. It uses heavily depend on Excel and email. I'm sure you all recognize the organizations that do a lot of, I've come across companies all the time who've got one person's job, and it's just to monitor the volume of emails that come in, and then manually redistribute them to the appropriate team or individual to handle that particular case. There's an awful lot of use of Excel data, being pulling data out of one system only then to re-import it into something else or re-key it. And a lot of information resides in people's heads because processes and procedures do evolve over time, and capturing that, if you capture it now and you codify it, you only, it's a snapshot of that one moment in time. So how do you go about actually producing these processes, these repeatable processes which are measurable and manageable? The traditional way of doing this is to have the IT consultant, when he's not counting sheep, to come in and spend a lot of time with you, doing understanding a day in the life of what people do in the mid-office and the back-office. But these days, there's some great digital technologies which will do that. One of which you may have heard of is something called digital twinning. There's also process mining, and then there's journey mapping. So journey mapping is actually following a day in the life of somebody that works in the middle of the back office, even the front office, to understand where the highs and lows emotionally are for these sort of things, where the friction points exist between systems and humans and systems, and out of that drops out all the opportunities for process automation from which you can then decide to prioritize which ones you're going to do first. Digital twinning is more about actually, and doing process mining, is all to do with monitoring the logs and the activities within those systems you have there to understand where the data comes from, what happens to it, where it goes to. And through that, you can identify a huge amount of redundant and wasteful steps, and you can cut down a lot of the junk that happens along, compress the timelines, and manage and monitor those particular processes. Nothing, of course, is a complete substitute for the human touch, but that's the journey. This is how you would start your journey in terms of digital automation, developing and managing and maintaining processes, whichever they might be.
So a lot of focus, as we see, while there are tools and technologies that exist, but I think the entire focus around how to manage the process around orchestrating a lot of that, right? So we've talked about the trends, we've talked about some of the challenges there. From your experience, if you want to share now what companies are doing today, and what's the latest and the greatest?
Yeah, I think if we have to start with what works very well. It is really some of the technologies that have move the industry to identify and assert copyright, whether it's watermarking, encryption, and bits to track each piece of creative content that's out there, right? Those are fantastic. That works very well. And to reiterate, the challenge really is when they get sort of, when the detection and identification happens, what happens from that point forward? until the point it's really taken down. And what happens when that happens at a scale and at a pace that's so quick? What we see companies struggle with is to really connect the dots, and I'm going to steal the word that Maninder used, the orchestration of the process. How do you take your process for content protection, content moderation, customize it for each geography, each sort of regulatory region, and create a governance around it so that it's clear and there is visibility on what to act on, and maybe there are some parts where the content protection is not there, but it isn't worth acting on. Create that governance and really manage the process through a workflow that gives it complete visibility. I think that's really an area where companies are working very hard. And I think what, in addition to it, works is really to identify the fact that this is not just a digital problem, this is not just really a user behavior problem, but this is a problem of not having an overarching process and looking at it from a life cycle and a framework around the life cycle and driving it that way so that there is complete visibility across the life cycle. And obviously, a key part of making it successful is having a workflow that is intuitive, that's really something that helps manage it end to end.
So within the systems you might already have in your organizations, there will be some element of workflow built into them already. Whether it's a document management system, whether it's a customer relationship management system, whether it's an ERP system, whatever, there's going to be some element of workflow built into it already. And they're often okay up to a point, and then they go to a certain, up to, only go so far, and then they don't play very nicely together. So why do we need workflow? Why do we need automation? We need workflow and automation to do two things. One is orchestration, which was just talking about here just now, orchestration. They're rather using APIs, which typically tend to be coded, and if the version of the software you're connecting to updates, you might need to change the API.
Sorry.
So that's terribly flexible and has a heavy dependency upon IT. So workflow will allow you to do will allow you to have orchestration between different systems, that handshaking I was talking about. Downstairs, somebody mentioned that some of their systems are so old, they don't even have an API. So what are these robots? Robots are really good for a couple of things. One is for performing repetitive tasks very quickly, flawlessly, repeatable. And really, RPA, robotic process automation, is perhaps slightly misnamed. It should be robotic task automation, because that's what they're really good at. The other thing that RPA is good for is performing the keystrokes, but otherwise, you'd have to do, if you were going to go into a login to a legacy system, perform the keystrokes in order to get information out, then carry that information and pass it to a workflow which can then be used, and then that data can, once it's been adapted and modified, can be then used to update the next system down the line. So RPA and workflow together, working hand in hand, are a really compelling combination. The other thing I'd say about workflow as well, and you may have seen this, you walk into an office, you see people with multiple screens on their desk, what are called swivel seat computing. They're logging into this thing, then they're doing something, and logging into that particular screen. Workflow and automation and orchestration of human activities, as well as the data, can give you a single pane of glass where it'll pull up and retrieve information from multiple systems onto a single pane of glass, which gives you just the information you need to see and act upon that which you're going to be using at that time. Frequently, I've seen people using systems where they've got a whole screen full of fields, but they're only using maybe a small quantity of those fields that is displayed to them. The rest of it is not even relevant anymore. How about, wouldn't it be better to have a single pane of glass which contains the information that you need to have to do that particular task at that particular time, to your layout, to your specification? Do you know what? If your business requirements change, the regulations change, if you've got the right platform, you're going to have something that's going to allow you to rapidly adapt and modify that particular process in a graphical way with no coding and put it into production really quickly. It's all about agility, speed, orchestration of human activities and tasks, and orchestration of data across different systems.
Yes, specifically a few years back when we did this assessment on a content security and content protection lifecycle of the company, the initial assessment, you know, gave about a 33% of productivity just by, you know, orchestrating using a workflow tool, using bots, and then a bunch of information that was coming through emails or running, you know, PDFs, you know, just to use AI to, you know, scrape that data and put it into the system. Excellent. So I think so. That's
Can
good.
I
so
make one
sure.
Last point. I think there's obviously a lot we've talked about on the business dimension of it, right? What makes sense? How do we do it more effectively? How can we prevent maybe revenue leakage? So on and so forth. I think what we've also seen is that there's a whole dimension of the societal side of it, of the side where it is important for everybody involved in this process to make sure that the content reaches the right parties and the wrong content does not reach people who might be affected. And because of the fact that the medium, which is either social media or easy to share platforms, is so accessible for kids, for people of all different backgrounds, what we see is a lot of exploitation of the accessibility of these platforms to really do all kinds of things. Right? So, some of you may have seen the report in New York Times last Sunday, the cover story of how child exploitation is being enabled by this. And some of the content that is associated with it could be really something that comes from legitimate sources. Some of it really is repurposed in media. I'll give an example. There is a whole bunch of actors who use children's cartoons and repurpose them with a different audio, with a different orchestration to really do some of these bad things. So when we have this image and when we really put a persona of somebody who is acting on this, we see it as a super hero personality, because we believe, in addition to really the business side of it, there is the side where this role protects the communities, protects really weaker sections of the community. So this really, in that sense, a little more
honest. Excellent. Yeah, you know, and thanks, Philippe and Mike, you know, talking about this, talking about what's existing, some of the best practices, what we've seen. I think we've I've got a sign for the last 5 minutes, so you know, open up for questions here, please, anybody.
So you talk a lot about the orchestration and being able to have all the things come together, but that process of getting all those disparate groups and making sure that you're able to gather, can you talk a little bit more about how you've efficiently done anything to facilitate the work to get to the point where you can have things working together?
You talking about the human collaboration or the
human collaboration for being able to pull out and elicit those requirements that you need to have to make the technology work?
A couple of approaches you can take. Good question. A couple of approaches you can take. We call it process discovery within Genpact. And that can be done on a number of ways depending on the scale and the scope of what it is we're going to do. Sometimes we do some massive, big blueprinting process automation exercises, process automation assessments, but in its simplest form, what we're doing is spending some time to understand what a day in their life is, or a particular team or a particular department, and how what happens upstream and downstream from that. We can then map that, and we can understand what the things that are concerned, what the hot button topics are that need to be done. Of course, underpinning all of that, of course, is all the data orchestration that goes alongside that. On a larger scale, we start using some of our tools, like the journey mapping tool we were talking about, where we can actually not only understand the steps and the process that people do, but the emotions involved in movement. Some tasks, people do them, they're kind of no big deal, they just do them anyway. Others are quite small, very tedious and very repetitive. And so there's a lot of emotion in understanding the emotion behind the steps and processes people do as well. Then I mentioned digital twinning and process mining, we have digital technologies which assist in that task as well. We're actually understanding how the data goes from point A to point B, and also what happens with the data, how it's processed. So we can actually produce it graphically. We can actually see effectively a map on there, a heat map, which shows where the data flows from system from point A to point B. So it's a combination of different things. There's no one silver bullet to doing this sort of thing. And this is where in combination of Genpact's great domain expertise in this particular field, they can actually understand really the pain points that people are experiencing, and also understand how we need the IT folks to buy into this as well when we do this automation assessment, because we need to understand what the underlying technologies are and how we can connect them up.
And essentially what we're doing is, you know, we're getting together the content creators, the marketing team, and the legal team, right? So, you know, one of the feedback we got was that, you know, essentially all these years we kind of, you know, never got the feedback from the legal team who are actually writing those policies and the rules and kind of validating them. But to just, you know, get everybody together on a blueprinting exercise like this, you know, then we try to kind of, you know, unveil the idea, you know, where was the efficiency falling? And if it was, you know, can it be plugged through some of these digital interventions? Any other questions? So, you know, really appreciate your time and attention here. And, you know, we're right down, you know, at one of the booths. I'm happy to continue the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.